Do we need a conscious feeling of cleansing in order to be in God's presence? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue on our series on biblical garments. Our theme for today is Garments of Splendor and focuses on the experience of the prophet Isaiah. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas and Paul Dibdolf from the School of Theology. I'd like to put that question out to you that we began with. Do we need a conscious feeling of cleansing in order to be in God's presence? What do you think?
So do we have to feel clean before we can come close to God? Is that?
Yes. And is that needing to feel clean, is that, must that be preceded with a sense of our own unworthiness?
See, I don't know if our feeling of cleansing is preliminary or consequential. In other words, does it precede our sense of God's presence, or does it result from a sense of God's presence? But I can tell you that the whole issue of cleansing, and by the way, I'm not quite sure what they meant by garments of splendor. You know, that phrase is lingering in my mind as somewhat indistinct. But I do think that the question of cleansing is a huge issue in religious and spiritual experience. I mean, you have rites of cleansing. You have things like baptism, like the washing of feet. You have rites of cleansing before the Day of Atonement. You have the instructions at Sinai that people were to clean their houses and bathe themselves and even do their laundry before this. So I do think that this metaphor or this line of thought is interesting. In the Bible, you have sin as contamination. And then you have many and various methods, and of course in the New Testament being faith, that offer a sense of cleansing. And I, you know, when I read about this, I think of an incident in my childhood. I grew up in rural Africa where we didn't wear shoes very much at all, and I used to run around all day long with bare feet. I had feet as tough and calloused as you can imagine. And of course, bedtime would come, and my mother didn't want to put us to bed dirty. At the same time, we didn't want to be run through the bathtub. And so I can remember on a number of occasions asking if I could just wash my feet, only my feet. And it's amazing how clean you feel just when your feet have been washed. You know. And so, you know, in my growing up years, this idea of cleansing, and of course, when I grew a little bit older and began to understand communion and the foot washing ceremony, that took on even greater things. So I do think that a conscious feeling of cleansing is a very important and very valuable aspect of spiritual life. But I'm a little bit unsure as to whether or not that comes prior to being in the presence of God or not. So,
see, there's this interesting passage of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount where he says, did we not perform many miracles? We say, Lord, Lord, you see. And he says, depart from me. Now, if you go back to the first of Isaiah, and we will come to chapter 6, which is the famous experience in Isaiah, but the first chapter tells a pretty grim story about the people of Israel. It starts out by saying, hear, O heavens, and listen, O earth, for the Lord has spoken, I have reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. The ox knows its owner, and the donkey its master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people do not understand. And then in verse 5, he says, the whole head is sick, the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot, even to the head, there is no soundness in it. But bruises and sores and bleeding wounds, they have not been drained or bound up or softened with oil. And then at the end of this, as it moves on in the chapter, what to me is the multitude of your sacrifices, says the Lord? I have had enough of burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts. I do not delight in the blood of bulls or of lambs or of goats. When you come to appear before me, who asked this from your hand? Trample my courts no more. Bringing offerings in futile incense is futile. Incense is an abomination to me. I cannot endure solemn assemblies with iniquity. So you have this sense of people cheerfully coming to worship before the Lord and being unaware of their sin. The same thing in Jeremiah 7, where the people rush to the temple. Oh, wonderful temple. So they apparently were unaware of their sin. At least it seems that way to me as I read this passage.
Unaware, or was it just that they thought by continuing on with the rituals that they could be forgiven without contrite hearts? I guess that's the way I have read those passages in the past, that that they took comfort in the rituals without being open to any kind of heart change.
Okay.
Which, you know, I'm thinking on a slightly different line, that when you read, for example, about the calling of Isaiah, the sense of uncleanness.
Right. Woe is me.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. And we'll look at that passage.
Oh.
And I want to come to that but first of all, I wanted to see what happens to the people here, because the Lord just gets really exasperated speaking through Isaiah. Verse 14, your new moons and your appointed festivals, my soul hates. They have become a burden to me. I am weary of hearing them. When you stretch out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. So, boy, the formal worship side of things is falling apart. He says, wash yourselves, make yourselves clean. Remove the evil of your doings before my eyes. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Rescue the oppressed. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widow. Mm-hmm. Now, this would tie in with Isaiah 58 later, you know, the true Sabbath fast. So you have this great calling here. And the Lord says, I'm not going to listen to your prayers.
But there's nothing said about how the cleansing can take place, right?
No. It just simply says, and so, you know, how does this take place? And maybe this would be the place to turn over to Isaiah 6. And see what happens with Isaiah, because he's the one who's given this message. He's delivered that on behalf of the Lord.
Well, doesn't that earlier passage, though, tell us how the cleansing takes place?
What
it's
do you mean,
by
Paul?
Changing, well...
Oh, you mean by doing good?
Yeah, by doing good.
By doing good.
Isn't that, that's the issue. The sacrifices don't do it. The rituals of worship, even though I've instituted those, they don't do it. Doing good.
So it's got to be an ethical relationship.
Sounds like it to me from that passage, at least.
Okay. Let's go to chapter 6. Do you have it there, Paul? Why don't you read?
I will in a moment.
Okay.
Here.
Why don't we take a look at the first four verses initially?
Isaiah chapter 6, yeah.
Yeah.
In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphs, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke.
One more verse.
Woe to me, I cried. I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty.
Okay.
So, Alden, very clearly then, a sense of sinfulness separates us from the presence of God.
Yeah. He didn't know what to do. I am a great sinner, see.
Yeah.
And I think you'd find echoes of that in certain passages in the New Testament as well.
Of course, it raises an interesting question in our day, where sin is not a topic that can be much discussed.
That's right.
You know, we have all kinds of explanations for things, but never...
You can always explain it away.
Or you can't call it sin.
That's right. Yeah. Now, let me read the next few verses. He has said, woe is me, man of unclean lips. Verse 6, then one of the seraphs flew to me, holding a live coal that has been taken from the altar with a pair of tongs. The seraph touched my mouth with it and said, now that this has touched your lips, your guilt has departed and your sin is blotted out. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And I said, here am I. Send me. And then so he's touched by a coal. There is the conscious sense of being cleansed.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's ready to go. Now my question is, how do you keep that from then, once you have the sense of being cleansed, how do you keep that from turning into an inappropriate arrogance? I am one of the clean ones.
Yeah, I was touched, so I'm all good now.
Yeah.
It seems like if you're really touched, oh boy, I'm not sure how that's going to work out the way I'm trying to say it. It's not just the touch, just like we were talking earlier, it's not just the sacrifice. What counts here, I think, is Isaiah's response, which is an acknowledgement of his sin and his guilt.
Yeah.
It's not – the coal doesn't change him. His heart has been moved.
Yeah.
And if you keep that kind of heart, then whether it's a coal or whatever it is, that's what.
But apparently God's willingness to send the coal to cleanse him is what said, you know, if God can take even a sinner like me, sure, you know, and cleanse my guilt, and here I am, I'm ready to go.
Right.
And that, I think, is a very important motive.
But that's the same as the Apostle Paul's experience.
Yes.
He called himself the chief of sinners, not because he'd done a lot of what we normally call sins, but I think because he had turned, he had fought against God, even though unwittingly.
And that's a very, I mean, if we look at Saul's experience, that's a fascinating one, because he was going, I mean, he was hell-bent, literally, to destroy those people.
Yeah.
And the Lord unhorsed him, and he said, oh.
But see, I like the point Paul made, is that if you have a sense of your own sin and inadequacy, or whatever you want to call it, that becomes a great barrier against arrogance.
Yeah, and I think that sense of our own inadequacy comes as we place ourselves, or as we come into the presence of God,
or as God comes into our presence. Sometimes against our designs.
Certainly so.
Yeah.
You know, even though Solomon didn't do a wonderful job of living this out, I think of, you know, with all these gifts, but only when he could say, "I'm only a little child. I do not know how to go out and come in." See, that is to be aware that whatever happens is God that does it in me, I think is a fairly crucial one.
So what are the garments of splendor? I'm still trying to figure that out.
Let's go to 61, verse 10. Isaiah 61. And this is the famous passage that Jesus quotes in the temple and stops short of the day of vengeance of our God. And verse 8 says, "For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and wrongdoing. I will faithfully give them their recompense, and I will make an everlasting covenant with them." And then verse 10 says, "I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My whole being shall exult in my God. For he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself with a garland, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels." So there is this sense in which you are aware that God has done something wonderful for you, clothed you with these garments, now you're ready to go to work. And that seems to be a very important conviction. Thank you very much, Dave and Paul, for helping us with our discussion on these good garments. Next week, our topic is a brand plucked from the fire, Zechariah, and the story of Joshua the high priest. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in for the Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.